Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. Hello and welcome to ID the Future. This is Annika Smith, broadcasting from the Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, and today I'm very pleased to have with me biology teacher Roger DeHart, who is calling in from South Korea, which is 17 hours ahead of Seattle time. Is that right, Roger?
That's right. Hi, Annika. It's good to be with you.
Hi. And that means right now it's 5 a.m. for you. Tomorrow.
That's right. Yeah. So, it's 5 a.m. in the morning here.
I owe you a debt of thanks for getting up so early and for being on our show. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Now, of course, you're famous for teaching both sides of Darwin's theory in a public school classroom, which, of course, was neither wrong nor illegal, but it got you into a heap of trouble and was documented in the film Icons of Evolution. About a decade has passed since then, and now you're living and teaching in South Korea. And we thought our listeners would be glad to get an update from you on your career and your perspective on academic freedom for teaching critiques of evolution. So, Roger, first off, where are you teaching in South Korea, and are you able to present your students with the full story on evolution there?
Well, yes. The short of it is yes. And I live right in the part of Seoul, and I teach at Yongsan International School, and my wife does also, and we have all the freedom to present both sides of the controversy, the evidence for and the evidence against Darwinian evolution, and it's really a nice place to teach, and I hate to say that I had to move out of the country to find such a place, but and I'm not sure that that's true. There are probably places in the United States where I could also, but it's a very nice place to teach.
Well, we're very glad to hear that. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you did have to move out of the United States to teach with the lack of academic freedom many of our teachers do face. I think in some states it might be possible to say that. But we're very happy for you, nonetheless, that you found a good home, and your wife, too, to teach as well. Is she also a biology teacher, a science teacher?
She teaches elementary art, so she has a little bit different situation as far as the ability to present ideas and things. But it's an open system anyways.
Well, that's very good. Now, you're teaching evolution to children of very well-educated parents with a high rate of PhDs, many in the sciences. What do you think counts for that? It's a rather special population if you want to go into who you're teaching exactly. And what's it like to have that population?
Well, that is part of the surprise for us, I guess, is that the Koreans in general just really love education.
Yeah.
And because of their drive for that, I mean, for them, I had a student just yesterday when I was discussing this with them, they just said, for our parents, education is everything. And they really do value the fact that some of us are here who have experience. I guess typically they get younger teachers in a lot of ways, and they really value a good teachers and things who have experience. And I think our principal did a study, and I think at least 65% of our parents have PhDs.
Wow.
And many times it's both parents who do.
Wow.
And it is an unusual clientele in that regard. And I'll tell you, it is humbling after parent-teacher conferences to come away and realize that the education level of our parents and their appreciativeness to educators in general. They just have a high esteem for them. And so it makes me want to do my job even better.
Of course. That sounds really ideal.
Yeah.
Wow. What's the intellectual climate there that you've encountered and observed? And do you think it's easier to be a Darwin skeptic for teachers or maybe even for scientists and for students?
I know that many of my parents have science PhDs too, and are doing research in biology, or some are cardiologists, I know that. And none of them have ever expressed concern that I am teaching, you know, the controversy, that I'm presenting both sides of the evidence for and against evolution. So in that regard, you know, there's even a lot of support for what I'm doing. So I just don't deal with or even think about the repercussions. And in that regard,
that's very freeing
and very nice. Yeah.
Would that all teachers could teach that way. Oh man.
Yeah.
So, well, that pretty much answers my next question. How does your experience teaching evolution there compare to when you taught evolution in the States?
Yeah, that's quite different.
Have you noticed, we've talked a lot about parents being open and responding positively, there being support for you as a teacher in a lot of ways, it sounds like, not just in your intellectual freedom. But how do the students respond when you teach both sides of the story? Are they engaged in class? Do they kind of check out, which is the struggle a lot of teachers have? What have you noticed about their interest?
My students are engaged. I don't know, you know, what the climate is in other classrooms here about the controversy, but I think it is really true that when you present a controversy, and, you know, I actually use Ken Miller's textbook, Biology, and so there's plenty of opportunities to call into question some of the things that are mentioned in the textbook. And when I do that, you know, the students, they're very thoughtful. They entertain those ideas, and really, it's a unit that's very fun to teach for me.
I imagine. And the students respond positively, it sounds like.
Yeah, they really do. They understand the controversy, and I'm privileged because not only do I have then general biology, but I have two classes of AP biology, and so the students have heard it before, and they even go through it a second time, right, in the AP biology classroom. Yeah.
So they're getting quite a bit. Well, that sounds great. You know, it's encouraging, and we're really glad to be able to have you on the show, not only for our own sake and the information you share, but also because it's so encouraging to hear that you have found a place where you can teach and teach really excellently in a way that you're supported as a teacher, not only by your administration, it sounds like, but also the parents and students who are engaged and involved. And that's very gratifying to hear. Thank you for sharing with us, Roger.
Yeah, you bet. It really is. It's one of those things where if I would just look at my life maybe 10, 12 years ago, and you think, man, alive, huh? You know, what have I done here? I really haven't done anything wrong. And you know, really, it's a great place. And we're just thankful that we are here. And if it was going through the problems that we faced at Burlington to get to this place, it was worth it.
Wow. Well, that is wonderful to hear, Roger. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you've been, Annika.
Want to spend your summer studying intelligent design in Seattle for free? Discovery Institute is raising up the next generation of scientists and scholars with the 2011 summer seminars for college juniors, seniors, and graduate students. The two intensive 9-day learning opportunities run from July 8th through 16th. This year, in addition to the seminar focusing on ID and the natural sciences, the Center for Science and Culture announces the new C.S. Lewis Fellows Program on Science and Society, which will explore the growing impact of science on politics, economics, social policy, bioethics, theology, and the arts. Discovery Institute will pay expenses for students who are accepted into the programs, and applications are open now through April 22nd, 2011. For more information, visit www.discovery.org/STEM. That's www.discovery.org/SEM.
For ID the Future, this is Annika Smith with the Center for Science and Culture here in Seattle. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.